something is alive in the funhouse. Something not alive like its father. Something better dead. Something that has the form of a human, but not the face.
This better be good.
It's gonna be great.
Something that feeds off the flesh and blood of young innocents.
Come on, here we go, this is it.
Something that tonight will turn the funhouse into a carnival of terror. The Funhouse, coming soon from Universal Pictures. The Funhouse, it's a carnival of terror from Tobe Hooper, the director who terrified you with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. I'm Trent, here with Kevin and Dave. Hello.
Hello.
Down to hand again this week, cats, somewhere. Kind of appropriate because the three of us, she's out of the loop. The three of us went and saw The First Omen at the theater, not together. Yes. You guys went together. I saw it on my own. I loved The First Omen. I thought it was fantastic. I was held in rapt attention, you know, the whole time. I loved the 70s aesthetic. I thought they nailed it, 70s Rome. It looks very much, right away, I just thought, okay, it looks just like The Omen. The original was very faithful. I thought it was very honoring of The Omen. I thought it was like, trying to add something to the original and not just cash in on an IP property that somebody owns and so therefore has to be made. I was surprised how far some of it went. Graphic imagery. I mean, there were some scenes. I was putting up the fingers. I was ready to...
Oh, were you blushing?
I was. I didn't know how far. There were points where I was like, what are we going to see here? This is getting really, even for me...
Pretty wild.
I had such a good time. And it's a long movie. It's 2 hours. But I was just really loving it. It's not without... I have some qualifications, of course. But I just thought, I'm sitting here. I'm watching a big... classic grown-up horror movie in the theater. This isn't something that happens every day, and I thought it was great.
I loved it too. I also like Omen, the original, but it's kind of like your aunt's favorite horror movie or something.
it's not really.
And like I was saying, it always will live in the shadow of The Exorcist.
Sure.
So I mean, I like The Omen. It's fine, but The First Omen, I thought. It rivaled what my previous thoughts of the franchise were. Yeah. And I don't know if you guys remember, but I didn't really love the original Day of the Dead, but I love the remake.
You mean Dawn of the Dead?
Dawn of the Dead.
Yes.
Which is blasphemy. I know that's blasphemy, that's just the way it worked. And it's kind of working that way with The First Omen. And I like to see this actual reboot continue on. This is actually a promising direction for.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I think it's better for me to go see movies with people. I've mentioned this before, that I go see a lot of movies on my own, and I think I'm just, like, overly critical, or, I don't know, maybe I'm just lonely, and I'm like, damn, so I'm going to have a great time with myself. I could never meet those expectations. This is a tough one, because I just talked about Immaculate. We're not that far removed from The Nun 2. We're not that far removed from Exorcist Believer. There's just so much, like...
Even Late Night with the Devil is a possession movie.
Yeah, there's
right,
so
in its
much
way.
church horror going on. But I like this one a lot. It was a little slow at times. I felt like they could have picked up the pace for some sequences.
100%.
If it was like, you know, an hour 40, even like 10 less minutes or something, like... Because all the aesthetics and most of the pacing were really good, I did appreciate like the non like horror-y stuff that they did, like going out to the club and like some of the character development was really, really good.
Yeah,
but this one, I think I walked away and thought like maybe I was too harsh on Immaculate, but I don't think I was, because what this one does really well—they're very similar movies, by the way.
Yeah, I want to see Immaculate now because I feel like I need to see the mess. You know,
they're incredibly similar movies. This is like a Dante's Peak volcano, like
I'm back in
situation.
On Immaculate. Yeah,
Armageddon, Deep Impact, like whatever. But like
Oppenheimer,
Nell Tiger Free, who is the lead in in The First Omen.
She's great.
And then we have Sydney Sweeney from Immaculate. They both have these like really emotional, like great, and I don't want to steal your thunder, Dave. Dave looked at me during The First Omen and was like, Possession. There's like, yeah. They each have a scene in each film where they go fucking bonkers. And they're both fantastic. However, the
so
first.
Specify what you mean by Possession, though. Not just a demon possession, but the movie Possession.
The scene in Possession where she has an absolute full-blown freak out in like right. the subway. But this one was actually scary to me. It had some serious imagery like you're talking about. Really creepy, not just uncomfortable. Like I was surprised a few times. Like, holy shit, yeah. they're showing this. Like, this is crazy. Yeah. But that's also horror. Like part of horror yeah, is to show you things you haven't seen, make yeah. you uncomfortable. It really, that's how you suspend your disbelief a lot of yeah. times in these films. Immaculate doesn't really have that. It's not scary. Like I said, it's very, some people loved the clap scene in The Conjuring. It went haywire and Immaculate. The First Omen actually had some like suspenseful and some scary scenes. Like also, both of them have a relatively original twist on the whole like demonic thing and what's behind it, what's happening. They're both really, really good. I don't want to spoil either of them, but I really dug where they went with The First Omen. Like that was just yeah. a cool, I don't remember. It's been a long time since I saw the original Omen, the remake that they did. So I'm not sure if any of those elements are in there. I feel like they're not, or maybe I just don't remember. But fucking bring me a sequel to this thing. Like, yeah. I know it leads right up to The Omen.
Yeah.
You know, the ending is fantastic. Like, they pull yeah. up the picture. I like that. But, like, this is worthy of seeing where this goes, especially yep. with Nell Tiger Free. You guys haven't watched
I'm
the
not
show
familiar with
Servant
her.
On
no,
Apple
I haven't.
TV?
I looked it up when you mentioned it before.
She's phenomenal. Like,
yeah, I love
it. Jaw-droppingly good in that show. Yeah. There were times that it was just a little bit slow for me. But hey, compared to what we get and the fact that it's like the fifth movie that's been shoved down my throat, not just church horror, but we're also getting so much like abortion horror and a lot of the and I know it's topical for the day, but it's tough when you get five movies that are all like yeah. overtly being like, hey, were you aware this is going on in the world right now? And it's like, yes, yeah. I am.
Handmaiden
you
know, horror.
Out of the four or five movies that I've mentioned, this was by far the best.
Yeah, I think certainly for the theater, and I thought it was scary. I was scared. I was scared later that night at home, just thinking about the movie. It stayed with me. I thought it was genuinely frightening. That nightclub scene. If you have a 2-hour movie that's as quiet as The First Omen, you got to have that nightclub scene so I can get in that popcorn. I was waiting for some noise to happen in that movie for so long. Like, please. And then when they went to the nightclub, I was like, yes, God.
What, to like eat your popcorn?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're afraid to make noise?
Yeah, because it's so, yeah.
Oh, so I'm so glad. I haven't actually brought this. So I'm going to bring it up live. I was eating nachos next to Dave. And the whole time I was like, I wonder if he's mad at me right now. Because I'm fucking hungry and I want to eat these nachos.
I'll be at
I wonder
the bottom
if he's mad.
Of the soda, like,
that's
care.
Great to know. I was super self-conscious like the first like 45 minutes. Like, I got to get through these nachos, man.
Yeah.
You know, genitals have been so mainstream. I mean, in our genre, we see them all the time.
Yeah.
Even way back, you know, to the 70s.
We're gonna talk about some today.
But there's so much genitals in mainstream cinema, and it's still kind of like, it shocks me. Like when you just see, you know,
well,
the beauty of yeah. childbirth with a demon hand coming out. It's like, wow.
Particularly.
That's a big screen.
Yeah, in that context, because you didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if we were going to see some stuff get torn up or what was going to happen there. I don't know how close we
were. It was
get.
All of the stuff in The First Omen. Was done incredibly tastefully.
It was.
A lot of class in this movie.
The way that was shot and edited is...
Even in other scenes as well, like, very class... And that is one thing I remember from, like, the original Omen, from, like, Rosemary's Baby. Like, everything is done just so classy. And, like, the aesthetic
yes.
that you were talking about, the apartment scenes with Nell Tiger Free and the other, her roommate there.
Yeah.
Very basic scenes, but like really impactful. And just that fucking apartment, the way that things were shot, it was super Rosemary's Baby. It was
the
super
70s.
Like, it was so
yeah,
good.
Yeah. It actually, I got some Suspiria vibes, both the original Suspiria and the remake, mm-hmm. especially with the political stuff, the unrest that's going on, you know, right outside the convent and all this. Both Suspiria movies, it kind of reminded me of. For caveats, I do agree it was too slow at points, and there were definitely points in the movie where I was thinking, show don't tell, man. I don't know how much, you know, there's a lot of whispered exposition, a lot of people whispering to each other what happened and what's going to, I'd kind of like if you'd show me some of this instead of, it was definitely over what I would say is ideal for the amount of whispered exposition in a movie, and I can't eat my popcorn. Just show me something here. So that was the only thing. And I thought the other thing, actually, I thought it definitely suffered from a little prequelitis. I think it's very hard with a prequel because you know the end. So you have this great movie, the suspenseful, scary, big movie. And to me, there's a little something, a little disappointing when you build up at the end and it's like, and you know the rest.
No, but
Good night.
I disagree.
And Damien, here's Damien.
I disagree. That's why I loved it, because they throw a twist in there. You get some explanation because the original Omen, there's just all of a sudden there's just a baby. I love right. the fact
yeah.
that like
no,
you get
that's cool.
that.
I just think that
there are some twists yeah. in there. It's not just that simple.
But
like
I
was impressed by
that. I think the ending just I don't know. It's like the ending.
I don't know why I was impressed. I was just like, oh wow, they have a picture of Gregory Peck. This is so cool. Like I was just so impressed at that point, and I was like, wow, that's so cool.
Well, I think the second that this hits streaming, we need to all come here and watch it, and we'll do like another like hot take episode. But we need to all bring the loudest food that we can and just eat it the whole time, and just be comfortable with each other.
He won't be able to follow the story because you have to hear all the whispering.
Well, but when it hits streaming, we'll have subtitles.
Oh, I finally saw a movie I've been wanting to see for years called Take Shelter. You guys ever seen Take Shelter?
Is that with
Shannon?
Michael Shannon? Yeah.
Yeah. You seen that?
That's good.
Have you seen that?
No.
Really good. It's a psychological horror, and it's very, very heavy. It's much heavier than I really kind of expected. It kind of made me feel like an amateur with some of the heavy horror movies we watch. This is like the cinema heavy. Michael Shannon, unbelievable performance. He plays a family man who starts having these apocalyptic visions. He has a wife and a young daughter, and he starts having these visions about a coming apocalypse, a storm, this very ominous stuff. And he's having these dreams about people attacking him. He's very paranoid. And he starts building a shelter in the backyard under the ground. And
is this a prequel to The Wizard of Oz?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. I can't wait.
It's very good. And that's that's on Hulu and Prime right now. So if you haven't seen Take Shelter, and I wanted to mention all the Omens right now, except for the first Omen, every other Omen is on Hulu right now.
Oh, nice. The originals
yep.
and the remake?
Yeah, I believe so.
They're all right up there. I have the box set sitting right up there on DVD.
I love the first Omen. I want to clear. We talked about the Omen not that long ago. I mean, everything seems not that long ago now, I guess. But we talked about the Omen. I fucking love the Omen.
I do too, but it's never a go-to for me.
Next week.
I see here, logging into Prime, that The Exorcist Believer. Did you ever see that, Trent?
I'm going to go with everyone in the world saying it's bad and just I'm going to move on with my life. There's only so many hours.
It's not one that I'm going to reappraise. I ripped that apart on the show after I saw it, and I stand by that.
Enough to get to. This week, it's Dave's wacky.
Freaky.
I don't know what it is.
It's like the estranged family member that gets...
Oh
put
yeah,
in, like you know, yeah. like
it's Dave's redheaded stepchild week.
Okay, all right, yeah, that works. We're gonna start with 1981, The Fun House.
Rebellious teen Amy defies her parents by going to a trashy carnival that is pulled into town. In tow are her boyfriend Buzz and their friends Liz and Richie. Thinking it would be fun to spend the night in the campy funhouse horror ride, the teens witness a murder by a deformed worker wearing a mask. Locked in, Amy and her friends must evade the murderous carnival workers and escape before it leaves town the next day.
I love the funhouse. Back when I was a kid, when I first watched it, the kid that is in this, the little kid that plays the pranks and all that, not only reminds me of myself, but kind of looks like I did as a kid. And I remember thinking that when I was a kid watching this movie. And when I saw it back then, I had no idea that this was Tobe Hooper, the same guy who made Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I watched both movies. They don't seem alike.
No.
I didn't care about that stuff back then. But now watching this and comparing it to that and everything else that Tobe Hooper's done, I judge it differently, but I still love it. It's so nostalgic for me. I think it's just like a good movie. It takes a while to get to the kills, to be honest, in this.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was a pretty safe, like, mainstream ode to John Carpenter. Like, both of the movies I picked this week were kind of a slight stylistic change for each director.
Yes, definitely.
This one, not as far. He would go further into space with, what's that movie's name?
Life Force.
Life Force. Life Force. That would be his final, like, way
frontier?
Over the top. Yes, exactly. But I still do love this movie. I love the characters in it. I love the setting. I find it hard to believe, though, that the same guy that got all those shots in Texas Chainsaw Massacre that were so scary made this.
Yeah.
I love that there is, you know, the main killer is this, is he albino?
Cowman.
He's cowman, half cow.
He's got a few things going
on. Yeah, there's two or three that they listed. I did not write them down.
He could have been better. In this day and age, he looks like a bad Halloween mask.
I don't know.
Overall, I like the Funhouse. I think that it has a place in the 80s slasher, early 80s, like, renaissance of horror movies.
I love the Funhouse. I thought it was great. I've been slow to warm up to this. I saw this only for the first time, like, last year. I didn't like it. I remember telling you that I thought it was dull.
I'm surprised you didn't see it as a kid, because it.
No,
me, this
I don't.
Was...
If I did, I don't remember. I the first time I just you know the thing is, and this is a core thing about this movie to me, and Tobe Hooper and all what you were talking about being so surprised that in my my favorite horror movie of all time, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that he did Eaten Alive after that, and then this was his first big studio production, so he didn't write this. This was presented to him, and he wanted to make it because of some themes that he wanted to make a movie about a carnival. He was always interested in that idea. I watched an interview with him. There's a little bit of a making of on YouTube that's just an interview with Hooper, and he's talking about Nightmare Alley, the original Nightmare Alley that was remade recently by Del Toro. He talks about being really interested in that idea of doing something with a carnival. But this is not, to me, a slasher movie. And every single, you just said slasher movie, everywhere you go, every single thing, everyone calls this a slasher movie. And to me, the whole thing about it and what makes it cool, the second time I watched it, I wasn't waiting for a slasher movie. Because it's not a slasher movie at all.
Well,
and so,
you got the teenagers.
Yeah, you have the teenagers and they die. Definitely, that's you have that.
It tricks you. The opening tricks you.
It's love the opening.
Misdirect.
You got the Halloween tribute. You got the Psycho tribute. You got all the Universal monsters on the wall. I mean, you got so many tributes in that opening. It's so good, and it does trick you. That's when you think it's a slasher. So that the first time I watched it, like, this is not a slasher. This is more about the carnival. This is and I think it does fit in with Texas Chainsaw Massacre in the way that it's about this kind of underbelly, this kind of seedy underside of life. And so this is the suburban kids, the very, very safe, very middle class, very normal suburban kids going in and getting exposed to this, and they talk about this particular traveling carnival. They even talk about in the movie that a bunch of shady stuff happened at the last stop. They don't really say what, but
dead people.
This carnival has a reputation, and so they go there. And I loved all the different scenes where they go to the different tents. They go to the freak tent. You guys ever go to the animal freak tent at the carnival fair?
No.
Oh my god, man.
Always.
They go to the girly tent. They go to the magician tent, the weird magician guy. You know, so they're meeting all these characters, all these carnies or carnival barkers and performers and the psychic. They go to the psychic and all of that stuff I loved. I thought, if anything, it kind of slowed down a little bit once you get to the horror. And then I liked Cowman. I thought he looked awesome. And I thought it was a great reveal because he's wearing that Frankenstein mask the whole time. And you're like, what is this? Why is this guy wearing a Frankenstein mask? And then when he pulls it off, my God, look at this Cowman. And he looks like the split cow that they saw.
Right. And Sloth from Goonies. He even does the chains in the air, like, ah!
No, both movies are Sloth from Goonies.
So I loved Funhouse. Thought it was great. I have a new appreciation for this movie, so I appreciate making me revisit.
Yeah, same. Happy to have revisited and done it, like, with no expectations and all the expectations. Mm. It's really ballsy that he opens up with a scene that's a total tribute to Halloween. That's super ballsy.
And Psycho.
Yes, exactly. Shower scene, yeah. Clown mask, like all this stuff. Like, that's a really ballsy move. And this is another movie that's a direct response to the surprise success of Friday the 13th. Every studio was like, we got to find one. But I get the feeling that he, despite still exploring those themes of family and of like some of the underbelly of society, I still get the feeling that this is like comical almost the whole way through. Mm. Like the opening, I think, is a total like, it's a joke. It's not just a tricking the audience. I think it's a joke. And I think that kind of goes through. I think this whole thing felt like a dress rehearsal for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 to me. Like he would make this one and then he pretty much went full bore. Pedal to the metal.
Poltergeist after this.
No, but I'm just saying, in terms of like similar type movies, like this was almost like a practice run for TCM2 or something. Yeah. But you're right. It's not a slasher movie. I love the original kind of aspect of like having this guy be this monster. I kind of wish he hadn't taken the mask off because the Frankenstein mask is pretty fucking creepy.
Yeah.
Especially in that low light.
And is it just me or like also when he's wearing the Frankenstein mask, he seems like really tiny. And then as soon as he rips the mask off, like he seems like a gargantuan like being. Mm. Maybe that's just me. And I agree with you. I love all the carnival stuff. And then the killing in this movie actually is incredibly not creative.
It's understated.
It's pretty slow. There's definitely some really like disturbing scenes where they could have gone a little bit further and it could have gotten like even a little bit more fucked up. Our next film, same thing, like they walk a pretty thin line. But as far as like the overall like acting, the way it's shot is beautiful. It's stupid that this movie was done in 81. It looks great.
Yeah.
I didn't think Carpenter, but it's interesting, Dave, that you did. I thought Stephen King for some reason.
Yeah,
I felt like
definitely.
Okay, this is like because Hooper and like Texas Chainsaw Massacre doesn't give you a lot about the kids that end up with the family, and then most of, well, definitely TCM2, it focuses on like the fucked up family. I love the fact in this one you get a glimpse into like the normal life. You get the parents, so Amy, our final girl, you get the parents, the little brother. You get like some normie family stuff and those dynamics, and it seems pretty legit.
Yeah.
Like the whole carnival back, like the current events that are happening with the carnival and all that. It reminded me of Stephen King, and then it blew me away. I did not know this, but that Dean Koontz did a novelization of this under a pseudonym, like Owen West.
That was an early,
And Dean Koontz is often compared to Stephen King.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, a notch below, never quite got that King status, but Koontz has a ton of adaptations out there. I'd love to read that book.
Yeah.
Because I'm super interested in the backstory of the carnival. I'm sure Koontz threw some like cops that are investigating the carnival and traveling around, more about the family. All of it was really intriguing to me. I dug this, and then even if I didn't like totally love it, the final shot, the final crane shot, as our final girl is is walking out of the funhouse and through the carnival is fucking awesome. It's the entire movie in one slow pullback crane shot where she's walking out of the most fucked up thing that's ever happened to her in her life, and there's just all the carnies out there pulling up stakes, picking up trash, some wandering around drunk. Like it's just
great.
Like the whole movie in one slow pull out.
Thought
it was great. This is a great one. I'm surprised it's not talked about more, but I loved it.
Have you guys ever spent the night? Well, I haven't spent a night at a carnival, but the fair, which is kind of the same.
Same deal. I think I've never spent the night at the fair. No.
Well, my parents had horses, and they would often they'd have a camper, like an RV, and they'd stay at the fair that week because their horses would be racing.
Right.
And they were
the
trainers.
Sure.
So I would often be there with like these like dirtbag kids that I made friends with at the fair. And we would kind of just tool around, and we would sleep wherever on the fairgrounds that night. And you would see a lot of the carny vibe. There's definitely like a vibe and a family community. It's like a band on tour, basically.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
but,
sure.
But I would love to see maybe an updated version of this where there's more like a little seedier, even with like the criminal activity and the drugs and stuff like that, because it is a... It's a scary, like, little ecosystem that exists. And this movie does capture that more than any other movie that I've seen. But I think there's a lot of potential for scares in this kind of hillbilly horror, which is like
definitely
the traveling.
I was thinking, where's the remake? How come? Why hasn't anybody tried to update this? I think it's so prime for like you're saying. I agree. I think somebody should do a remake.
Well, not too long ago, American Horror Story, I think season 4, is great.
Oh, come on.
No, it's fantastic. If you want to get into...
That's where I left.
If you want to get into this, American Horror Story Freak Show is really good. But yeah, I would love to see more because those scenes, despite being pretty quick, where they do go to each of sort of like the really weird... tents in the carnival, those are super interesting. It helps the time go by fast in the movie, like you're way into it. And then, like you said, Trent, like it gets a little bit slower when the killing starts. I almost kind of missed like the carnival.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like a little bit. Definitely. Or I would have liked to have seen some of those characters come back because it gets, they introduce you to a lot of characters, main characters, and those, the carnival characters. But then once the killing starts, not only does the movie slow down, but it gets very tight in terms of cast. You really only end up with the kids and one or two of the carnival people. I would have loved to have seen some of those other folks come back. I also have been damaged by the missed opportunity in carnival scenes by Texas Chainsaw 3D when I thought I was going to get full-on Leatherface tearing ash through a carnival, and I was disappointed. Same thing here. So I'm always going to hold these carnival movies to a higher standard because I just want to see somebody go absolutely fucking ape shit at one of these seedy carnivals.
The cold open that we talked about, the fake out tribute cold open, that to me almost made this movie worse because I think a better cold open would have been what happened at the Fairfield Carnival before that they're talking about later on in the movie. Like a cold open of that, of some creepy guy luring a little kid or something. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree. It didn't really fit. I don't, thinking about it now, I don't really understand why that was there. It's kind of a joke, like you were saying, Kevin. I think it's kind of a wink from Hooper that here's what we're trying to do. The Universal wants me to cash in on Friday the 13th, so here we go. There's a killer behind
the
mask.
It's too much of a wink.
I thought I read that it was shot after.
Oh, probably.
And I don't know if that was a Hooper idea or, again, the studio being like...
Because it makes no sense. That makes sense because it doesn't do anything for the story. Like, you don't really ever revisit... He doesn't go on to do any other pranks or anything.
No, and her little brother there that's our prankster in the beginning, he doesn't really play like
a big
role. Like, but he doesn't ever quite go away. He hangs around in enough scenes that you're like, he's going to be very key in this.
Yes.
He's not.
Not at all.
It's bizarre.
Nope.
But to your point, that's a great point, Dave, that maybe they could have used that opening or they could have had some sort of, like I said, some cops, you know, that are investigating or something, because all you get is like the monster's dad, who's like the carnival barker in like seven different roles or something. All he does, you get like just like an exposition dump as he's like beating the guy, being like, I told you can do that to whoever you want, but just not one of our own. And like, that's it.
Yeah.
That you get one sentence.
I hate it when I don't want artists to grow, you know, because I feel like that people feel like that about, you know, us trying to make art. But I seriously was just thinking about, like, what would make this better? Oh, if it was just like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and they open up the beginning with like the news report of like the macabre thing that happened. But I mean, I'm as guilty as any other consumer of art that I just want the same thing.
Yeah, but I mean, I can see your point. Like, do you want your favorite artist to open up with a cover song on their new album? That's kind of what Hooper did here.
Right, exactly.
I like that it's different. And again, you know, this was a script that was written by Larry Block. I did watch an interview with Larry Block, too, that was really interesting. It might have been the same thing. It's on YouTube if you look at the making of The Funhouse. But Larry Block talks about how he went back and revised the script once he found out that Tobe Hooper was going to do it. He knew of Texas Chainsaw, but he hadn't been a big fan or anything. And once it was given to Hooper, he went back, watched Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and then went in and changed the script and accented the stuff with the family, the carnival family and all that stuff, and it did things to it to try to be like, okay, this is what this guy does. So I thought that was interesting.
The actual Funhouse was sick.
Oh man, those animatronic! Like, wow. And then in the intro, they show when the intro is and the credits are coming, and they're showing all those animatronic people from the Funhouse.
That to me, that's cool. I felt like was Toby Hooper's, you know, paintbrush on there, like putting his style on there. All those the fact that like one of the things in the Funhouse was just like a mannequin with like a couple feathers stuck to it, holding a rose. Well, terrifying.
what is it? Canopy Lake Park? We've gone to the last couple of years for like the Halloween one.
Yeah.
There's that one ride it's not even a Halloween ride, but it's the one. You know what I'm talking? We thought we were gonna get soaked. They trick you the first time, and you're like, oh my god, those things are fucking creepy. Like, what is it? It's a Small World. Ride at Disneyland or Disney World and stuff. Like, those things are not meant to be horror rides, but they are horrific. That stuff is terrifying. There's one in the sequel to Urban Legend. There's a whole sequence like that that's really well done. It's a great horror sequence, and it's like one of those rides, but it's miners, and it's like so creepy.
Coal miners, you mean? those animatronics that we're talking about, those were real. Hooper found those in Florida. They went to Florida to film this because in the off season when the carnivals aren't running around in the off carnival season, many of them all regroup and they go to Florida. And so that's where they went. And Hooper found all these animatronics. They were old. I can't remember how old they are, but they were very old. They'd been made by this woman, and he bought a bunch of them after the shooting wrapped. He bought a bunch of these, and a couple of them are in the Dancing with Myself video. Billy, I forgot that Hooper directed the video for Dancing with Myself by Billy Idol, and I went and watched it after I found this out, and there they are. There's like three of the animatronics from this. They're quick, but they're in that video.
Yeah, I think I read, too, that one of them's in House of a Thousand Corpses in Captain Spaulding's spot or something, which makes total sense. Yeah. Like, that's a mad Rob Zombie thing to do.
I like when she finally gets out of it, she's emerging from like a gorilla's mouth. There's like so many cool things, and like the Funhouse, like this whole vibe. This is the thing that's coolest about this is that it's something that we don't have anymore. I mean, you have haunted houses, but the Funhouse was just a bunch of fucked up shit. It like wasn't necessarily like scary on like a monster level.
I'm saying there's nothing fun about
it. It's just upsetting and like disturbing and this like, I don't know, this madness. And that kind of goes for the whole carnival because, you, like you were saying, you got the freak show. You have the exploitation of go-go dancers, all that kind of stuff.
Loved the score for this. John Beale, we've talked about many times. Almost kind of gives it a classic. I thought it kind of had a classic monster movie score, which...
Dude, he did Disturbing Behavior.
Right, yes.
Yeah, a lot of X-Files stuff. And then cinematography, Andrew Laszlo. I'm not sure if we brought him up, but like he did The Warriors, which you guys must have rocked The Warriors.
Honestly,
when you were
I'm
younger.
Not. That's a blind spot for me that I know I should have seen it, but I don't know that I have.
First Blood, Rambo. That's not a blind spot for me.
Obviously, First Blood, hell yeah.
But also Poltergeist too.
I loved the tagline to this too: pay to get in, pray to get out.
Oh, that's a good one.
Very funny.
It was called a box office disappointment.
Yeah, it was $3 million budget. $3 million made $7 million, I think.
Yes, I mean, were they hoping for Friday the 13th?
Yes, they were. They were literally hoping for Friday the 13th money.
Right.
And I think that's another funny part of it. And I think I had the same experience when I watched it the first time. I like to imagine the Universal execs watching it for the first time, thinking that they've got a slasher from Toby Hooper that's going to make Friday the 13th money, and then they see this thing. They must have been like, what the hell?
Yeah.
It's kind of funny, too, in that the Larry Block interview that I watched, the writer of this, he was talking about Toby Hooper and went on a little monologue about Toby Hooper, and he said that he was talking about it's a real shame, you know, that what happened. I mean, I think we can still love him and all acknowledge that his career just never went anywhere and just got worse and worse over time. But he was saying, this guy Larry Block was saying, you know, Toby never understood Hollywood. He never understood what they wanted from him. He just didn't get it, and Hollywood didn't understand him at all. They didn't get him. And he told some funny stories about Hooper that made him sound like kind of eccentric. It's kind of interesting.
You know what part I hated? I hated the harbinger of this movie.
Oh, the lady in the bathroom?
The witch. God the is Looney always Tunes, watching you. Witch Hazel. like the worst like look ever. It's like
I liked it. I dug it.
That's good. I didn't mind it.
God is always watching you.
I mean, just think of the guy laying on his back in the sun in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like, it's an old man. You know, like that part. Oh, come on. Why can't we have him back? I hate art.
You mentioned Kevin Conway is the actor that played all three Barkers.
Yeah.
That was a stipulation for taking the role. They wanted him to be the dad who's a Barker, but his stipulation was that he wanted to play all three Barkers. And it's pretty amazing, although I have to admit, when I sat down to watch this now, I didn't know that. And I was wondering why the first two guys was like, they look exactly the same.
Yeah, why is this guy running around a lot? He must be tired.
No, I thought they were different people.
You did?
I did, yeah.
The one in the girly tent has a different wig and different mutt shots, but the first two, I was like, why?
I like it because it implies incest somehow.
I think that's what they're hinting at.
That's heavily implied throughout. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's why everything has two heads.
This was Rick Baker on effects. I mean, didn't have a lot to do. I liked Cowman. I thought Cowman was awesome. But other than that, I wasn't a whole lot to do for effects in this. You had the axe through the head scene was cool. I liked that.
The two things I remember most from being a kid watching this is the axe scene. A lot of the deaths are displayed as on a ride as it goes by. But and the other one is the girl screaming into the fan when her family gets there.
Love that scene.
That scene was very memorable to me.
Yes, that was a great scene. That was a classic horror movie thing where you're so close. You could be rescued. They're right there. You can see them. You're watching them. But the fan is too loud. They can't hear your screams. And they're driving away. Yeah. Oh, man.
How many situations would you have a big fan like that? Only at the carnival.
Yes. Kevin, were you a Dean Koontz guy? You brought up the Koontz.
I was, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, big time.
And I definitely read at least a couple under Owen West. He had two different. Lee Nichols, I think, was
I never knew the pseudonym thing.
Okay,
so
he had a couple.
I didn't read any of them, but yeah, I read a lot of Koontz.
Yeah, yep. I didn't read the Funhouse, but I did see Toby Hooper said that he read it many years later. He said he had a bunch of copies, never bothered to read it, and he said he thought it was fun.
Yeah, Koontz, another one where I don't think his adaptations were... his books weren't... Well, he has some books on par with King. Same thing, though. Adaptations were never, like, super great. Like, Watchers was a really good book. Not a great movie.
No, there's never been a
good movie. Hideaway was a really scary book.
Yeah.
Not a great movie.
This was a video nasty, strangely, and there's some speculation that it was confused with... The Last House on Dead End Street. You guys heard of that movie?
Well, Fred 70s,
Vogel,
right?
Yeah, Fred Vogel talks about it a lot. But that was sometimes released as Funhouse, two words. And so there's some speculation that this ended up being a video nasty just because the censors got confused about which movie they were talking about. Because this wouldn't really, doesn't really fit in with.
No, there's a few lines that they come close to where I could see it pushing into that territory, especially back in the early 80s, but no, not this cut.
Oh, Last House on Dead End Street is on Tubi.
Yeah, someday I'll get there. This is why I can't go back and do takes on Believer.
It's about snuff films.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, I revisited New Witness.
Oh, yeah, what'd you think?
Oh, it was great. I'd seen it like when it first came out a long time ago, but I loved it. It's great.
Really good.
So he's like, yeah, well, I need to plug in the hot plate. What do you think, this duck dances by itself?
I really still don't quite get it. Okay, next up on Dave's Redheaded Stepchild Week from 1995, Castle Freak.
A troubled couple and their blind daughter come to Italy to visit a 12th century castle they've inherited. Soon they are plagued by unexplained noises, mysteriously broken objects, and the daughter's claims of an unknown nocturnal visitor in her bedroom. When the housekeeper and a local sex worker are discovered savagely murdered in the castle's dungeon, John must unlock the castle's secret to save himself from jail and his family from the castle's secret inhabitant.
Stuart Gordon. I love Stuart Gordon, and a lot of his stuff, we have been huge fans of Reanimator. We've shown it, we've watched it, we've talked about it. There's all kinds of great stuff, a lot of H.P. Lovecraft adaptations. This one is like a departure, I think, for Stuart Gordon, although he, aside from Beyond and Reanimator, he did kind of go everywhere in his career. I'm always talking about the movie Stuck that I'm a big fan of.
Yes, love Stuck.
But this is also a departure. This is like some gothic folk horror, and it all takes place in, guess what, a castle. And you got the dude in the dungeon. And on paper, Castle Freak never looked like something I would be interested in. The way it looks is almost like a play or something, or like a soap opera.
Yeah, yeah.
There's that look to it. But the budget that went into the gore and the effects in this must be the whole budget, besides for, you know, the
very low budget movie.
I think that this movie works on every horror level that it doesn't work cinematically. It might look like it's made for TV or whatever, but it's just so good. It's so dark. It's so mean and evil, and it dares to get gross. I love this movie. I hadn't discovered it until probably a year ago, which is weird to me because you guys had never seen Funhouse back in the day. This one never came across my radar. I think the font, the cover to this, do you remember what this looks like?
Well, I see, because I don't...
It's got the monster right on the cover.
Definitely
right?
Not the new one that's on Tubi, though. Not the one.
And it has like a red font. It's like Castle Freak, and he's like... It's like him posing
on
the
cover. Yeah,
I know
that one you're talking about.
Yeah, and it looks so stupid.
Okay.
It's less stupid than the one that's currently on Tubi, but still, yes.
If it just showed like a castle, or something, like that would be cool. I had no idea this movie was as dark and as cool. This may be one of my favorite Stuart Gordon horror movies of all time.
This, I was waiting for Cosmic because it's Gordon, Lovecraft. You've got like all like the, it's Coombs, it's Crampton. You've got everything. You're making dinner. You're throwing in those recipes. I thought you knew what you'd get, you know? And then especially like mid-90s, this is way more like Edgar Allan Poe. In fact, this is a lot in line with the Jack Nicholson Corman movie that we talked about than it does with anything that you would think about when you think of Stuart Gordon. And very similar in that the dude that owned the castle was the dude that owned the studio. They shot it super fast, which I think is what they were shooting it before Band's family. So it was Charles Band, Full Moon Studios, and he had a family reunion coming to the castle. So they were just like, all right, let's get in here and shoot this movie real quick.
Yeah.
Never really got Cosmic. It never really went kind of anywhere, but I love where it went. It's way more giallo, not just because it's in Italy. I love the cop aspect of it. I don't know why I'm talking about cops so much tonight. It really must have been in the mood for some.
It's a big part of this. It's a big part of this movie.
Policia. I liked the sort of ambiguous story that they don't tell you everything about in terms of like why the Castle Freak was punished. Maybe I missed it, but like, why was he put away in the castle?
They tell
why
you.
Was he punished? They do?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't wait for your take then. I only watched this three times, so good on me. Must have been really focusing on the remake. That's the remake that I watched, by the way. We'll get to that later. But this does work on every level. Coombs is great. Dave, when you say like made for TV, it's almost like everybody's acting like in a soap opera in this. You said that earlier when we were watching it. Like, everyone's reactions are like very subdued and it is dark, and then they'll have like these outbursts. You know, Coombs is dealing with a tragedy that he himself brought upon his family, was an alcoholic and driving his kids and killed the young son. And there's just like these random outbursts all the time. And then the cops show up and like they'll be talking normally in random outbursts. Like, it's very oddly acted. But the Castle Freak, super great. The effects are awesome. There are some pretty, again, walking the line scenes in this, and there's some legit, like, scary. When he gets out of his chains and is wandering around the castle and stuff, that stuff's, like, pretty legit spooky. And way more gothic than I expected, and I loved it, so...
Yeah, I loved Castle Freak. I'd never heard of this until this was released straight to video. It never didn't get a theater, and at this time, Full Moon Pictures was having financial troubles, so they didn't even have a one sheet, they didn't have a poster, they had nothing, and they just put this out, got dumped out on video. So I think that's why it's maybe less familiar to me anyway. But when I hear Stuart Gordon. Jeffrey Combs, I think it's Combs, C-O-M-B-S.
Combs, yeah. I have a friend whose last name is Combs. That's why I was saying Combs, but it's Combs, like Combs' hair.
Okay. Yeah. When I hear Stuart Gordon, Jeffrey Combs, Barbara Crampton, he's got the crew back together again from Reanimator, From Beyond. Also, this is, I think, much like The Funhouse, is a departure for the legendary horror director. This is not what I expected. I was expecting slapstick splatter comedy, and this is nothing like that. Like you said, it really is more like a Corman Poe type movie. It's very dark. It's deadly serious. There's hardly any laughs in this. The story is as bleak as you can imagine. I kind of had to laugh, even though it's not funny, but it's kind of funny when you know that this man has he killed his young son drunken driving, and then not only that, he blinded his daughter. She survived, but somehow
kind of a key element to the story. Yeah,
he also managed to blind his daughter. Good Lord! And that figures big into it. And I love the poster that's out there now of the blind daughter, and the Castle Freak's hands are just coming up from it. She's kind of scantily clad on that poster for what's supposed to be a young.
Yeah.
What is she, like a teen? I mean, she's barely a teenager, it seems like, in
she's
this.
Talking about prom in
a
this.
A little,
so.
Yeah. Oh, she does. Yeah, yeah. I was surprised at how deadly serious this was. Loved the effects. I kind of wondered if this was a little bit cut, the version that's on Tubi, or not, because I feel like I read about some stuff that I didn't see in this. But that's neither here nor there. This is a great one. I'm glad I saw this quite a bit, really, to dig into here. You mentioned the reason. They said the reason is because the mother of the Castle Freak, the Duchess, she was married to Jeffrey Combs' father.
Yeah, I got that.
The Castle Freak is his half-brother. And his father abandoned the Duchess and the son, and ran away to America and married his new wife. So she was punishing the child.
Okay,
she was
punishing his
child to get back him. So it is kind of weird. Like, I mean, it's one thing to be mad about being left, but you're going to chain up your child in the basement for 40 years of a castle?
Absolutely. It's totally reasonable.
Was it 40 years or 14 years?
I thought it was 40.
Oh, okay. Because that makes more...
Yeah, because he was like 4 or 5.
Yeah, and now he's...
I mean, I don't see the light of day too much. But I just wonder, like, what, you know, this barbarian, it wasn't Malignant, but there are these movies where you just put someone away from the sunlight in a while, and they grow these giant muscles, and their skin turns gray, and their head gets all bulbous, and I just wonder, like, is this going to happen to me if I don't go outside?
We need to get some more mirrors in here so that you can see what you're turning into.
But I thought they said 14 years. At least I know that it takes 40 years to get to that level.
You're halfway there.
I thought the acting was great in this, and I did notice, I think you alluded to it, Kevin, there are some quirks. I thought the performances were really good.
Yeah, they're good.
There are some quirks where Jeffrey Combs... He kind of runs into every scene. There's so many scenes where he just comes running from outside the scene, and he's all frantic. It just keeps happening over and over again. And he's very manic. He's waving his arms. He really, really leans into those frantic moments.
He's such a great actor. Yeah. I don't know. I just love just his general mannerisms. And, like, he can just suck in the sides of his nose. And I'm just like, oh, you know, he's killing it. I'd like to see him in... I guess it's late in his career now, but I'd like to have seen him as more of a mainstream actor. I think that he's very, very good.
Yeah, he's in so many things that you don't realize. I think it's called Fear.net or something that I watched like not too long ago. But have you guys ever seen Would You Rather?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With Brittany Snow from X. He's fantastic in that. It's watchable. I liked it. Also pretty dark. Slightly more comedic, but...
A movie will come up if you watch this on Tubi after this called Lurking Fear. It's another Full Moon feature. It has Barbara Crampton and it has Jeffrey Combs. Oh. And it is fucking terrible. It is the worst piece of shit ever.
Thanks for the warning. Yeah. So don't roll into that one. What's it called?
Lurking Fear.
Don't roll into Lurking Fear.
Tubi will try to make you watch it immediately after Castle Freak.
I was kind of surprised when the marital strife is first revealed, because they go to this they travel to the castle together with the daughter, and one of the early scenes between them is that she mentions to the maid, fix two bedrooms, basically, one for me, one for him. And then there's two scenes where he tries to convert right into some sexy time, and that's when she brushes him off. And it was very, I think you said melodrama or gothic relationship stuff. It was kind of, it was sad, you know, when she's fighting him off, and then you find out about the alcoholism, and we can't tonight. It really kind of was depressing that the two of them are there so estranged in this cold, dark, depressing
their
castle.
Their blind daughter. I mean, they're basically only staying together for the daughter. You get that vibe.
Yeah.
He inherits this castle he didn't know about and this like family lineage he had no idea about. Yeah. It's a very, very serious movie. All the way to the sex worker that comes into play.
Yes.
And then she and the cop that, you know, when they suspect that things are going on at the castle, they bring the police in, and the police kind of laugh at them, like, we're going to go search this whole castle, you American idiot. Like, get out of here. But then you find out the cop was also, the sex worker gets around, and the cop had a kid with her. I mean, there's a lot of, like, there's even a quick scene at the end where the cop is standing with the little boy.
Yes.
It's quick, but, like, that shit is dark.
This reminds me of, like, if you gave Jack Nicholson in The Shining the benefit of the doubt. You have the big place. You got too much room. Yes. It's abandoned. You got all the alcohol on hand, and you're an alcoholic. And also, when I was watching this, Connie walked by the TV and saw the monster at the end, and she goes, "Oh, they finally gave the old lady from the bathtub in The Shining her own movie."
Okay, so now let's talk about the bits.
Let's talk about gender. Gender.
Yeah. A little bit. What's going on there?
Castle Freak is a bay.
Okay, that's what I was... Okay.
It's my assumption.
Yeah, he had been castrated, but there's...
I thought maybe out of boredom. He just could just... pulled his own dick off. I mean, I feel like that's what I would do in solitude for 40 years.
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't think that's all he's got. I think he would want to keep that.
Well, he certainly comes out of the chains like feeling like that thing works. This is a horny fucking monster, dude.
Woo, that scene where he frees himself.
Oh,
from the chains,
that is so, right? Yeah.
Thumbs up, right? There's thumbs some... up.
One thumb up.
There's some scenes in this. The attack on the prostitute with the breast and all, that's straight out of August Underground or Atroz. You got the breast thing going on. Whoa, really?
It's also
gross.
That also is very sad because he just watched Jeffrey Combs do that to her.
Yeah,
he breaks himself free and gets a hold of her, and he tries to emulate. And it's just so, like, animalistic, and, like, even that I was like, this is so gross. I can't believe they're showing this. But at the same time, it's so much deeper.
It was like a Frankenstein thing. Like, he wasn't initially trying to attack her. He was just mimicking what he saw Jeffrey Combs doing. He even gives her the bottle of wine.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, and then when she smashes that on him, that's when he goes full freak.
I mean, I feel like, is that what dating for you is like?
Yes.
Kind of like, yeah.
That's what I was thinking when...
I do what other guys do. Get him a bottle of wine.
That's what I was thinking when...
Why you need to stop watching movies like August Underground. Trent goes on a date and he's like, that's what other guys do.
I was thinking when Combs brings the prostitute back to the castle and he takes her down to the basement in the wine room, they have sex up against the wall of this disgusting, dirty dungeon. I was thinking, guys, be like, I know a spot. That's where they go.
That sex scene in the basement was so, I don't know, it kind of disturbed me because, like, she had, like, there was like red marks from his actual teeth on her breast.
I didn't notice.
And like saliva all over it. Like, not even the monster. I'm talking about Jeffrey Combs.
Like, dude,
like he's really muckling onto her tit for this scene. I mean,
well, it's that whole sequence. So, like, he falls off the wagon, goes to the local bar, and just gets shithoused. I think we've talked about it a few times on the show. It's a really interesting take to see somebody sober do a drunk scene, like to act it out.
Yeah.
And just like everything else in this, like it works and it is like enjoyable to watch, but that too is so over the top. Mm. And that's like it carries right through the bar scene all the way to him bringing her back to the fucking castle basement. Like, it's just so like exaggerated.
Yeah, that bar scene is where you really start getting into the cops, and I loved the cops in this. I loved all the Italian. There's so much Italian in this, and this does the thing that I love when movies do, where you've got a foreign language going, but not everything that's said is subtitled.
Yeah,
and so it adds to the mystery and the confusion, because the police are talking amongst themselves, and the sister who happens to be the sister. The maid of the castle happens to be the sister of the lawyer, who turns out to be Jeffrey Combs' lawyer.
He's a great character,
too. Man, so sleazy. I was thinking, like, man, this is what Amanda Knox was dealing with. Here, we got some real Italian justice system.
Hey, this is where I'm going in, like, 2 months.
Be careful. This was a $500,000 budget.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. Can you believe that? Do you know the story about how this came to be? Stuart Gordon was in Charles Band's office, and he had a poster for Castle Freak, and that's all it was. It was just a poster and a title, and they didn't have a script or anything for it. Somebody had mocked up a poster, and Charles Band said, look, if you can make Castle Freak, I'll give you $500,000. You have final cut. You can cast what you want. You can do anything you want. You can release it unrated. There has to be a castle, and there has to be a freak. Those are the only instructions.
But I thought it was based on a Lovecraft.
From there,
loosely based on a very short story.
From there, Gordon took it, and I think, was there a co-writer? I think
yes.
So from there, they took that
same co-writer from Reanimator, from Beyond.
Okay. Yeah. So from there, they took that and they built the story around it. But those were the specific instructions. There just has to be a castle, has to be a freak, and that's why Gordon did it. Because
and by the way, I have a castle. You can use it next weekend.
Band had his own castle. So that's Gordon was saying that's why he did it, because he was like, hey, I can bang out a $500,000 movie and I get final say on everything that happens, and I'll do that.
The castle, they show it in the movie, the town's Attigliano or something. It's only like an hour from Rome. So I'm going to be there in a couple months.
Oh, nice.
And it's like an hour train ride from Rome. I'll be there for 4 days, I think. I would love to try to make it up there.
Is it just you and Allison? Is Nora going with you? Is this a romantic getaway?
It's my family, yeah.
Oh, your whole family?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, you should take Allison to the dungeon.
Yeah, just do our own version of that scene. Let's cut
do
this,
a little
let's cut
a
this
little
all
romantic
out. I don't think
getaway.
I've ever said my child's name on the show. I don't even think I've
said.
Oh,
yeah, sorry.
My
Allison is his wife.
Bambino Bella. I love the Italian in this, so great. So how was the remake, Kevin?
Oh, my God.
2020? From
2020. Remarkably 2020. Like, how? I'm not sure what else is on. I have a Roku TV, and the Roku channel comes with it, which I've literally never used. So bad. Looks like an early 2000s movie. Way more cosmic. And they throw in like all like the Miskatonic, they throw in the Necronomicon, the whole backstory is way more cosmic, and the old ones, the ancient ones, Cthulhu.
Oh, they roll that stuff in? Because that wasn't even part of the short story that this was supposed to be based on.
Oh, yeah. They pull in tons more Lovecraft stuff. They change it from a family to a bunch of hard partying, drug using college, just out of college.
Oh, sounds cool.
Misfits. There's a couple, a boyfriend, girlfriend. They party one night, he's fucked up and he crashes the car, she gets blinded, she actually ends up inheriting the castle. It's really bad. Huh. Well, I say it's really bad. As far as horror movies go, it is kind of fun if you want all the Lovecraft and like the other Gordon references, that's okay. It's super horny. There are scenes in this that are almost like just softcore porn, and they go on for a while.
Okay.
And then the gore actually is pretty good. The Freak, however, looks absolutely ridiculous. There's something way more charming about like a mid-90s, you know, some makeup folks that know what they're doing. This one is pretty bad.
Huh.
I like the blood-soaked sheet look for most of the movie.
That's great.
Yeah, it was like really, it was almost kind of like mummy.
Oh, you know what? That reminds me. One thing that stood out to me is the daughter. So part of the gag here is that the daughter knows that the Freak is there, discovers the Freak is in the daughter's room, but she's blind, so she can't verify it. And she's trying to convince everyone that there's someone else in the castle, and Jeffrey Combs is the only one that believes her. But the castle Freak takes her sheet. When he leaves, when he first is in her room and she realizes he's there, he runs away with the sheet and then later is wrapped up in it, covers his face in it. Why didn't she ever say, oh, I guess she didn't see it. I could think, why didn't she? Yeah, he has my sheet. He took the sheet because then you can say the sheet's not here, but I guess she would not have seen that.
Well, one thing that we're not selling hard enough with this particular movie that needs to be sold is the best part of this movie is that the castle Freak the entire time is going like he's about to come at any moment. He's edging the entire time, and that's just his personality. He's just like
that's just him going through life. Normal level is
that's why I think he pulled his own dick off. That's why he was put in the basement in the first place.
Right. Well, that's the thing. In this movie, the killer is the virgin. This is kind of incel horror.
Okay.
Usually it's the final girl.
Well, I will say there is a scene in the remake where, so the castle Freak in the remake, by the way, is a female.
Whoa.
Interesting.
And there is one of the sex scenes in the remake, the guy is blindfolded for the sex scene as a kink.
Okay.
Castle Freak walks into the room and absolutely mutilates the girl that is on top and takes her place.
You're kind of selling this, actually. You say it's on Tubi, you say?
No,
just the
Roku
fact
channel.
That it's a girl castle freak, they like went like, oh, freak. Yeah, freak.
You know, she's like, a real freak, man.
In 1995,
Freak
was more just like, oh, it's freaky. Or like a carnival freak.
You guys ever get freaky?
But now it's like, you know, the freak has a different... I'm glad they went with that updated version.
Next week, it's Cat's Week. She's not here, but she has communicated to us her picks. I don't really...
What she got?
Cooties.
I know she's got cooties. What movie did she
pick? That is on Tubi, and also Children of the Corn from 1984, movie we haven't talked about.
A movie we almost talked about.
Kevin tried to talk about it, and we didn't let him.
We kicked it off. I don't know if Kat knows this.
I don't think
she's
She's not going to remember that.
She should remember. She was there for that episode,
wasn't she? That's one of the movies I watched this week. It was a total throwaway. I was doing some other things.
Oh, you watched
The Corn?
There's
also like a 2020 Children of the Corn.
Oh, I already
forgot
about
that. I think
it's
on Hulu or something right now. It's free on one of the streaming
God,
services.
I already forgot about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, not good, guys. No, not I know. Good.
It can't be worse than the original.
Oh,
it can.